Okay, so let's start with our motivation. Again, really coming back to this feeling of joy at the opportunity we have to have met the Dharma, to be able to practice it, to have all the conducive conditions to do so. And of course, there's difficulties in our life. That's the nature of cyclic existence. But rather than focus on the difficulties, let's focus on our freedom and our fortune and how we can make our life meaningful. So by doing that, then our minds will be joyful now. We'll engage in a lot of virtuous activity that benefits ourselves and others. At the time we die, we won't have any regret or remorse. And we'll have accumulated a lot of virtue to sustain us as we go into our future lives. But especially if we have the bodhicitta motivation, aspiring for full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings, that will make all the merit we accumulate multiplied by billions of times and make it very strong and make it long-lasting. So it doesn't just ripen in some temporal happiness, but eventually will ripen in our own awakening, giving us the wisdom, compassion, and power to be of great benefit to all others. So let's have that be our motivation this evening for listening and sharing in the Dharma. Talking about Aryadeva's really magnificent text called the 400 Stanzas. I don't know about you, but I love this text, you know, because he really speaks to your heart and he doesn't pull any punches and he's very honest and direct about pointing out our fault, you know, our misconceptions. And I find that technique very, very helpful. You know, I need something like very straightforward that says, duh, you know, to get through to me. Otherwise, the nice, pampered one doesn't, you know, it doesn't hit my affliction strong enough. So we've been, we're on the sixth chapter right now, talking about the afflictions and how to abandon them, because the afflictions are what interfere with are acting out the bodhisattva deeds, you know. We may have the wish to engage in the bodhisattva practice, but our afflictions sabotage that, you know, and make us get involved in ignorance, anger, and hatred, ignorance, anger, and attachment instead. So we've been going through this chapter about how to deal with these different afflictive emotions. So we talked about anger last week, and we're still on the section about anger. Our anger has not gotten exhausted yet. Okay, so we're on verse 144, which talks about the inappropriateness of anger when inferiors use abusive language. And I've noticed, are you definitely... or makes this difference between, you know, when superiors do something and when inferiors do something. And from my perspective, I don't think it matters which it is. Anger doesn't help you in either case, whether the person is superior to you in qualities or has power over you by being your boss, or whether the person is inferior and you're the boss or have more qualities. I don't think it matters much. Okay, so I would say the inappropriateness of anger when anyone uses abusive language. So Aryadeva says, abuse from inferiors does not ensure escape. Abuse from inferiors thus should be seen as isolated and trivial. I think abuse from anybody should be seen as isolated and trivial. My guess is maybe why he's doing something about inferiors here. It could be because of the stratification of Indian society and there being quite distinct caste systems, even though the Buddha didn't like the caste system or approve of it. That didn't mean it went away. So it could be that, or it could be, you know, that when we think of superiors, he could be meaning like the wise people. We usually think of superior, meaning superior in terms of power or money, and he may be thinking about it in terms of wisdom. Yeah, so if a person who's inferior to you in the sense of wisdom abuses you, there's no reason to take it seriously. If a person who is superior in wisdom says something to you that you interpret as abuse, yeah, maybe you should pause and not interpret it as abuse and really listen to it and take it in, and it might help you. So it could be that reason why he makes that difference. I'm not sure. But in any case, abuse from inferiors doesn't ensure escape. I'm not sure escape from what, but abuse from inferiors thus should be seen as isolated and trivial. In other words, don't take things personally, don't buy into them, don't be so super sensitive and touchy about what other people say. Okay? And so they give, there's a very beautiful story that they give to illustrate this point. Okay? And so that is when, for example, you know, if people are abusing you, instead of getting all bent out of shape before because of it, think, well, at least they didn't beat me. Yeah, because they could have beat us. I mean, this is what we were doing when we had the flood last week, you know, in Chenrezig House, and the water was leaking. We said, well, at least nobody was hurt, or at least the water damage wasn't in the entire building. And thank goodness it was caught quickly. And thank goodness, you know, they came out with the fans and everything quickly. So we, you know, by our way of thinking about it, we didn't get all freaked out and down about it, but we just thought of actually how fortunate we were, considering that happened, that it wasn't worse. Okay? So it's the same kind of technique here, is thinking, you know, at least, you know, nobody beat me. Yeah? Because people could have. So there's the story is about one Arya, great practitioner who had realized emptiness. His name is Purna. And he wanted to train some people on the other side of the river Sona. Okay, so he wanted to train them and give them Dharma, the people across the river. And the Buddha told him that these people were wild and fierce. And if he lives there, he'll experience a lot of suffering. And Aryapuna said, if they abuse me, I will think how wonderful it was that they didn't beat me. They are so kind. If they take my life, I will think how wonderful it is that they have put an end to this rotten body. They have helped me. Yeah? So you change everything into, you know, through your way of looking at it, through something that is beneficial to your Dharma practice. And when the Buddha saw that that's the way Aryapurna was thinking, then he gave him his permission to go and teach those people on the other side of the river, because he realized that he could handle what happened, or whatever would happen. But it's true, isn't it? I mean, it sounds crazy, yeah, but it makes sense, isn't it? I mean, if somebody's killing you, what is going to be more beneficial for your mind to say, this is unfair, why are they doing it, I can't stand them, you know, who do they think they are, I want to slug them back. Is thinking like that, if somebody is threatening your life, is that going to help your mind? Or when you're dying, is it going to help you to think like that? Zero. Nothing. It only harms you. Yeah. Whereas if you think, okay, at least I'm free from this body. And he was an Arya, so he had no attachment to his body. Yeah. And so for him, giving up his body, there was no problem because he had no attachment to it and he could also determine his next rebirth, yeah, or his next manifestation. So in that way, you know, makes it very easy. Okay, so always, you know, really something to think about, because otherwise it's so easy for us to get really trapped into our old ways of thinking, you know, and hang on to them, even though they're very, very detrimental to us. Okay, verse 145, this is about refuting that it isn't wrong to punish the slanderer of an innocent person. Okay, so here's Joe Blow, this person who asks questions, and Joe Blow says, it's not wrong to punish those who slander the innocent. Meaning himself. Because that's the way we always feel when somebody speaks badly of us. I'm innocent. What are they saying about me? Yeah? So it isn't wrong to punish them because they're saying something about sweet, innocent, adorable me. Right? I mean, and this is the whole trip that's going on in Congress now. Yeah? Yeah, one party criticizes the other one. The other one says, but we're only working for the country. It's you. Yeah. Quite crazy. So Aryadeva says, if harming others is not even of the slightest use to you, your approval of useless aggression is just an addiction. Okay, so... Yeah, so Joe Blow says it's not wrong to punish those who slander the innocent. So then the question comes up, is harming somebody, retaliating them, you know, for slandering you, is that going to benefit you? And Aryadeva's saying, retaliation by hurting others isn't of the slightest use to you in reversing what has already been done. So this is the whole thing that our parents told us, two wrongs don't make a right, but that human society hasn't learned. You know, you wrong me, well, I have every right to wrong you, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to punch you in the nose. Okay? And, you know, so if it doesn't help us in any way to undo what already happened, and instead... it just infuriates the other person and gets them madder at us so that then, of course, they're going to retaliate and do something harmful to us. Then what are we doing? You know, your approval of useless aggression is just an addiction. You know, that we're just addicted to, you know, you said something bad about me, so I'm going to say something bad about you. I mean, it's really childish, isn't it? And it's, you know, it's very much what kids do. You know, and you see adults do it all the time. We can't just let something go. Yeah. And yet, when we retaliate, we do something that causes more problems for ourselves. And then often we look so stupid in the eyes of others. But we're going to say, no, I don't look stupid by retaliating. Other people will respect me then, and they will fear me because I retaliate. If I don't retaliate, then they'll think I'm weak. Yeah. So let's just go drop some bombs on them. Yeah. But we really wind up getting ourselves many more problems that way. Okay? So he's saying, thus your approval of aggression, which has nothing but drawbacks and no advantages, is just an addiction to something wrong. In other words, stop being a fool. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the next one, okay, is about preventing anger by considering the benefits of fortitude. And specifically the appropriateness of fortitude towards abuse. So after the last thing, you know, kind of your right to retaliate because somebody slandered you, after that got shot down, then Joe Blow says, but what wise person tolerates others' worthless abuse? Yeah. How can I think of myself as a wise person if I tolerate this kind of junk? Okay. So, Aryadeva's thing, he says, if through fortitude enormous merit is acquired effortlessly, who is as foolish as one who obstructs this? So if by practicing fortitude, you know, remaining calm in the face of harm, if by practicing that brings enormous merit, that is, comes about just effortlessly by your own mind remaining stable and calm, if that's the case, then who is as foolish as one who obstructs this? So if you can create so much merit effortlessly just by keeping your mind steady and firm, and not letting it get bent out of shape, then who is so foolish not to accumulate that kind of merit so readily? Yeah? It really is rather foolish, isn't it? And that's what I was saying the last time, I think it was. Now, when I get mad at somebody, then I think, is this person really worth, you know, destroying my virtuous karma with? You know, are they really worth that? And the answer is clearly no. You know, nobody else is, you know, so important that I should throw away my merit because of that. Yeah. And so similarly, nobody else is, what they do is so bad that I should throw away my opportunity to create merit by, you know, developing fortitude. Right? Okay. So, if through fortitude you stop anger and you don't harm others, you'll acquire the fragrance of virtue. Okay? They talk about people who keep pure morality as having a very sweet smell. Yeah, the fragrance of virtue. So you'll also acquire a flowing river of tranquility, mm-hmm. undisturbed by ill will. Think about that. If your mind can remain firm, you know, in confront of people slandering or abusing or insulting you, yeah, then you'll have a river, your mind will be like a river of tranquility, undisturbed by ill will. Because what is it that makes us unhappy? Is our own anger. It's not the other person's words, yeah, that really are the source, really, of our unhappiness. It's our interpretation of their words. And then once we get angry, you know, who in the world is happy when they're angry? Nobody. Everybody's miserable when they're angry. Okay? So if getting angry and retaliating just makes us miserable and destroys our merit, then how does it benefit us? It doesn't. Okay? So do you see what they're doing here? They're using reason to oppose our habitual emotional tendency, yeah, which develops, which has all these phony baloney excuses for why it's good for me to blow up. Okay. And you'll also, if you maintain fortitude, you'll have a pleasing appearance. So I was saying last week that if you practice fortitude and don't get bent out of shape, then it creates karmically the cause to be very nice looking in a future life. You know? And you can see how that works, because when we get angry in this life, our whole face gets so contorted that it's actually quite ugly. Isn't it? And I mean, we can read body language when you look at somebody. If you go into the office or, you know, into the monastery, wherever it is, and you see some, you know, you see somebody with a certain expression that indicates they're angry, they're not very attractive looking, are they? Yeah? And our instant feeling is, well, I don't know why they're angry, but I don't want to go near them. Yeah? We feel that way. Well, okay! Yeah? So who is as foolish as one who obstructs the supreme path? For he just destroys his own good qualities by getting angry and retaliating. Only those who bear insult should be called wise. Okay? So when they talk about the four practices, practices of somebody who does the Chenrezig practice, it's also the four practices of one who is a monastic, a shramana, okay, a renunciate. So it's not to respond with insult when insulted, not to respond with abuse when abused, not to respond by beating somebody when they beat you. And what's the last one? Anybody remember it? It's a similar... Oh yeah, not to respond with anger when somebody's angry with you. Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't mean repress all these things. It means really deal with your mind and learn how to look at the situation from a different perspective so that the anger dissolves. So one way to do that is to think about the disadvantages of anger and the benefits of practicing fortitude. Yeah. Another way of doing it is by thinking this is a result of my own negative karma. Okay. Today I wrote a letter to one inmate who they just accused him of something new and threw him in the hole and transferred him to another prison, so he's in solitary in the unit, you know, people are screaming on it, and he can't sleep very well. And he says, you know, the charges against me are made up, and there's no reason, you know, they say that they're keeping me in the hole to protect me because other inmates might, you know, be upset with me, and this is because this is a very high profile case. Yeah. But he says, you know, I've been in here for 15 years with a high profile case. Why are they only doing this now? So he's feeling very much like he's being treated unfairly and has no control over his experience. And I can certainly understand how he feels. But, you know, getting angry about it is not going to do any good when you deal with the Department of Corrections in the state. You know, they don't care. So I sent him some verses from the Wheel of Sharp Weapons about, you know, when we lack freedom, it's because of our own negative karma created in previous lives. Yeah, and when we have to bear insult and abuse, it's because of things, you know, negativities we've created in our previous lives. And so to just accept that instead of getting so angry. Yeah. And this technique of working with anger, it's the technique that the Buddha told to Angulimala. I forgot to mention this in the letter to him. But Angulimala was that murderer who had killed 999 people and was looking for the thousandth one to make his necklace of 1,000 bone, you know, finger bones. And the Buddha tamed his mind, and later he ordained, and he even became an arhat. I mean, think of the kind of practice he had to do in order to purify that karma and become an arhat. But when he went into the town, even though he was a monk, when people knew that he was the murderer Angulimala, they just like were terrified of him. They would throw things at him. They would beat him. Everything like this. And he would come back from alms round, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit bloody and in shambles. And the Buddha said, bear it. The Buddha said, just bear it. You know, this, even though he was an arhat, he's still experiencing the result of killing all of those people. So he said, just bear it. That's it. Yeah. So, and he was an arhat, so he could do that. Okay, then verse 147 is about the inappropriateness of approving aggression that defeats only the weak. Okay. So, the verse reads, aggression especially does not arise towards the powerful. Why then do you approve of aggression which defeats the weak? So aggression doesn't arise towards the people who are powerful and strong because we don't have the power to defeat them. Yeah? So usually, not always, we don't work our aggression out on people who are stronger than us. Okay? I think maybe this was before the advent of the American teenager. Because that's what American teenagers do. They take their aggression out on their parents, yeah, who are supposedly stronger than them, but it winds up not to always be the case. Yeah? Are Singapore teenagers as unruly as American teenagers? Yes. I don't think they're quite as unruly.
So when you can't get access to guns, but in the public school there were weapons, and you make them find different ways to bring them.
Yeah. Okay, so usually aggression doesn't arise towards the strong. But, you know, when you're really hurting inside, you will be aggressive towards anybody. It doesn't matter. Yeah. For what reason then do you approve of aggression and aggressive anger towards the vulnerable, which defeats only the weak? Okay. So if you say, well, you know, no use getting angry and being aggressive towards somebody who's more powerful because they're just going to beat me up or suppress me or take it out on me. But I can, you know, be aggressive towards somebody who's weaker than me because I can really beat them. Yeah. It's kind of like the thing of, you know, the guy who gets scolded at work and so who comes home and kicks the dog. Yeah? So it's kind of questioning that whole thing. You know, why are you doing that? Okay. For what reason, then, do you approve of aggressive anger towards the vulnerable, which defeats only the weak? I mean, you know, you're defeating somebody who is already weak, who you already have power over. What use is that? Okay. So approving such aggression is really improper. And it's like bravery in dominating children. Yeah? It's like taking out your anger on kids, you know? Or somebody else, you know, kicking the dog. Or we do not kick our cats.
And she knows it.
Yeah. Okay. Then verse 148 is about the appropriateness of rejoicing, since fortitude towards a cause of anger is the source of all accomplishments. Okay. So Joe Blow says, but, it is reasonable to get angry, since if you're patient, others may think you're incapable of retaliating and take advantage of you. That's an argument we hear a lot, isn't it? You know, if you don't stand up for yourself, yeah, somebody hits you on the playground, you hit him back, because if you don't stand up for yourself, then they're going to have contempt for you and think you're weak. And so often in the prison system, when I've taught about developing fortitude and not getting angry, this is the one thing the guys bring up. You do prison work, you know it. And they all say, but if I don't, you know, retaliate when somebody cuts in front of me, then they're going to have contempt for me and think I'm weak, and they're just going to continue to, you know, trample on me. So it's very suitable for me to retaliate and to do something. Yeah. So Arya Deva says, whoever is patient with the source of anger develops meditation. Saying you fear the source of good qualities is just foolish of you. Okay? So whoever patiently tolerates a cause for anger, okay, so whoever is patient with the source of anger develops meditation. Yeah. So that person, if you can remain patient or develop fortitude in relationship to somebody who is trying to instigate something, or who, even they're not trying to instigate, they're definitely harming you, you will be able to develop the concentration on love and all other and many other kinds of meditation. Okay, because even cultivating love for a short time brings many benefits. And so in Precious Garland, Nagarjuna speaks about the benefits of cultivating love. Okay, but I'll do this first and then we'll deal with, but others will think you're incapable of retaliating and taking advantage of you, because that's an argument many people use, you know, not only when they teach their kids, but also as adults. You know, if I don't retaliate, they're just going to continue to do this. Okay? So I should say here that if somebody is doing something, is behaving in an inappropriate way, developing patience does not mean that you let them continue to do that. If somebody is doing something harmful, yeah, the Buddha is not saying just sit there and cultivate love and let them do something harmful. Yeah, you can intercede, you can stop the harm, but you can do all of that without being angry. That's what the Buddha is talking about, because it's the anger that makes it something negative, and it's the anger that makes our behavior very erratic. Yeah? Because if somebody harms us, even we may have to intercede and, you know, speak forcefully with the person or do something to stop the harm. If our minds are calm, we'll do only what's necessary to stop the harm, and that's it. If we're angry, we go way past that line of what's necessary to stop the harm. Yeah, we go way past that line because our mind's angry. It's out of control. We've made up so many fearful stories that, you know, we feel like we have to destroy that person. Okay? And then that goes way beyond and creates a big mess and harms us. And so often when I go into prisons to talk to people, because I often talk about anger, it's a subject, you know, people inside prison and outside, you know, like to hear about. I often ask the guys, how many of you are here because of anger? So many hands go up, you know? And you can see the look on their faces of, yeah, like, yeah, I just got totally uncontrolled due to my anger. And here I am because of it. Yeah. Yeah. So then you have to ask yourself, you know, if you get angry and okay, somebody's doing something to you, you don't want them to have contempt and think you're weak, so you get angry and then you go way beyond what you need to do to stop the harm. Then what? Yeah. It's not good for you. It's only bad for you. Yeah. There was one other inmate that I write to. He has a real problem with anger. And his cellie was some guy who, the inmate that I'm talking about, he's in his 20s, late 20s by now. And the cellie was maybe 30 years older than him. He was a Vietnam vet. He has some mental problems and so on. And so the cellie would keep saying, oh, you know, thinking that you know, my friend was going to attack him or do something. And so the cellie was always saying, okay, you want to fight? You want to fight? Come on, let's fight. And you know, this person, I'll just call him Mike. That's not his name. But, you know, Mike thought, well, yeah, he's challenging me to fight, and he's accusing me of doing all these things. And I could fight with him. But what's the use of fighting with somebody who has mental problems and is seeing all these things because his mind's not functioning right? Yeah? Why should I beat up somebody like that? I mean, he's very willing to beat up other people. But somebody who's like challenging him and this and that. But this, I think, was real progress, because he really said, well, what use is it to challenge somebody, you know, to respond to somebody else's aggression like this when it's clear this guy has mental problems? And so he told his cellie, he said, look, we're both just going to wind up in the hole. This, you know, this doesn't do either of us any good. And I think he's trying to calm down his temper regarding other people too, because every time he gets in a fight and feels he has to defend himself, because otherwise people will take him, you know, take advantage of him, every time, you know, he says to himself, well, you know, they'll respect me if I defeat others. And I said, they won't respect you. They may fear you. But respecting somebody and fearing somebody are two different things. Yeah. And if you just repeatedly wind up in the hole, what good does that do you? You want to get out of prison, and every time you mess up, you're keeping yourself. It's like saying, I want to stay there longer. Okay, so the eight benefits of love that Nagarjuna spoke about is, first, gods and humans will be friendly. And it's true. If you respond to abuse, you know, with a level mind, then, you know, people will be friendlier to you. And it will make an impression. People don't always have contempt if you remain calm. I remember one time I was at Elliott Bay Bookstore. Were any of you there? Mm-hmm. I was giving a talk. You were there. I was giving a talk. Yeah, you too. And one, it was about anger, I think, or something. It was about something in the Dharma. But one woman raised her hand, and then she stood up, and she went on for about 5 minutes about how everything I'm saying is wrong, and her type of Buddhism is such and such, and it teaches this and that, and her type of Buddhism is the right thing, and what I'm saying is just wrong. And she went on and on and on. And you know, in front of this whole crowd. And at the end, I just said, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. And then I went on with the talk. And then afterwards, when I was doing the book signing, so many people came up to me and they said, wow. You know, I mean, they were really impressed with that. And I did it. I mean, it was just like, first of all, I knew what she was saying was off the wall. But even so, it's like, what, you know, there's no use saying anything Yeah? There's no use saying anything else but just thank you. And but, you know, it made an impression on people. They didn't think I was weak. They kind of, yeah? Yeah, it's interesting. That when I was in at Auntie's, who was the, any of you there when I was at Auntie's? Yeah. And I was giving a talk, and one man came from kind of the backside to me, and he didn't say anything, but he looked rather strange. Anyway, some of the people in the audience, when they came up to the Abbey later, they said to me, well, what did you think about that guy coming up? Because they were saying, my husband, I could see him, you know, sit up straighter, and all the men in the audience were like, you know, kind of getting ready to, you know, do something in case he did something. And I said, well, yeah, I noticed him, and I was going to ask him to sit down, except he walked away. Because I thought, you know, he was there, I was going to say, please, you know, come sit down. What else is he going to say? Yeah, but he walked away, so there's no problem. But, yeah, I found that interesting. You know, all the men, I guess, were... and all the women were nudging their husbands. Okay, so gods and humans will be friendly. Even non-humans will protect you. Okay, so the devas think well and want to protect you. You will have pleasure of mind and many of the body. And it's true, you know, if you remain calm, your mind is happy. Your body is relaxed. If you get angry, you know, what happens to your body? Your stomach's tight, your face turns red, your veins pop out. Yeah, your mind's unhappy and your body's all stirred up also. I mean, have any of you ever felt sick because you've gotten angry? Yeah, you feel sick afterwards, what it even does to your body. I remember one time, I forget what it was that made me angry, but I was vacuuming at that time, and I said to myself, you have to stop because you're vacuuming and you're angry and you're going to hurt yourself accidentally if you don't stop right now. You know, it's like you've got to drop the anger.
That's what these guys in construction are quite aware of.
The construction guys are.
They're in unsafe situations. They'll just walk away from things until they settle themselves so they don't hurt themselves.
Okay. Yeah, that's very wise, isn't it? Yeah. So if some dispute breaks out on the job, they just walk away and let things settle down. Yeah. It's true, because if you're working with drills and...
Or if you're just getting frustrated with what you're doing, you know,
yeah,
not going right, and, you know, you'll make it worse.
Yeah. Okay, poison and weapons will not harm you, because nobody's going to try and poison you and put, you know, attack you with weapons. Effortlessly you will attain your aims, because this is the advantages of love. Okay, you will attain your aims. And be reborn in the world of Brahma, so in that form realm, in the God realm. Okay? Through love, you are not liberated. Though through love, you are not liberated, you will attain the eight virtues of love. So what it's saying there is, though love alone will not liberate you from cyclic existence, because it's the only the wisdom that realizes emptiness that liberates us, still you will attain the eight virtues of love, which were what I just read before. And you can see the benefits from that. So it's foolish to fear patience and give up the source of these virtues because of fearing people will have contempt for you. Think about that, you know. We're so afraid. What are people going to think of me? They're going to think I'm weak. They're going to take advantage. They're going to have contempt. Okay? And so we let ourselves get angry and we let ourselves attack back, verbally or physically. And And then he's saying it's foolish to fear patience and give up the source of these virtues because of fearing people will have contempt for you. In other words, it's so interesting, you know, when we have this fear of what other people are going to think about us, we will do almost anything to prevent other people from thinking badly of us. Yeah? And so you have so many situations where teenagers dare each other to do something, and somebody does it just out of attachment to reputation. I don't want them to think I'm weak. I don't want them to think I'm afraid. So they do something really stupid because somebody dared them to. Yeah. And so here's this whole force of peer pressure. Okay, so of course somebody daring you to do it is an extreme situation. But how many adults, too, have stories in their mind, if I don't do X and Y, they're going to think A, B, C. And so therefore they do things that are not wise out of attachment to reputation and fear that other people will think poorly of them. Case in point. What's going on in the Republican Party in Congress? Yeah? You know, you have the moderate Republicans who are, you know, now afraid of the Tea Party people, and so going along with those positions, even though they know it's a dead-end avenue for them. But they're afraid, you know, of the force of the Tea Party, and they're afraid of challenges by more right-wing people in elections. So instead of standing up for what they know is good, they go along with it. And now some of them from the beginning, a few smart ones have been saying, look guys, this is not a good strategy to use. But, you know, many of them, just out of that pressure, then, you know, are doing something so damaging. Yeah? So, Aryadeva is saying you're just going to destroy an excellent source of good qualities because fortitude, you know, brings so many benefits and you're just destroying that. So it's like somebody who is embarrassed about abstaining from misdeeds. Yeah? Have you ever been... think about this. Being embarrassed when you say to your friends, I'm not going to do something. How often, even as adults, we don't want to say what we really think if we know it disagrees with our friends, you know? And even if we know what our friends are doing is wrong, or it's not wise or whatever, we're so afraid to say anything about what we really feel in our heart out of fear of what they're going to think about us. And I cannot tell you the number of adults, not kids, adults, that come to me and say, when I go to a party, I feel obliged to drink because if I don't drink, all the other people at the party are going to think I'm strange. Or if I go out, you know, with business colleagues, I have to drink because otherwise all my office colleagues or my clients or whoever, they're going to think something's wrong with me. These are adults saying this, and I cannot tell you how many times people have told me, I can't keep the fifth precept because I have to drink in these situations. And it's like, huh? You know, you're an adult and you cannot say to another adult, sorry, I don't want to drink? Really? You know, sometimes I get the feeling that almost nobody at the party really wants to drink, but they're all doing it because they think the other person wants them to. And I remember saying one time when somebody told me this, somebody who was a Buddhist practitioner, I said, well, you know, there might be other people at the party who don't want to drink too, and wouldn't it be nice if you just said, no, thank you, I don't want to drink, and I'll take, you know, grape juice or whatever it is. Yeah? And would maybe, you know, some other people might actually feel good about that, and it might inspire them. There might be some people who have been doing the 12-step program and are on the verge of, you know, kind of not keeping their sobriety wish, and then you come along and say, no, I'm not going to drink, and then all of a sudden that person goes, oh, what a relief, I'm not going to either. And this person said, oh, I never thought of it. Yeah? That actually some people could appreciate your not drinking. Yeah? But it is, you know, how sometimes we're embarrassed about abstaining from doing a negative action. You know? People may ask us to come and do some kind of dirty business deal, but we're afraid to say no. You know, what are they going to think about me? Oh, you know, they're saying that there's such an easy way to make so much money, and I'm saying no. What are they going to think about me? And so we go along with a bad business deal. So then, verse 149. This is about the appropriateness of cultivating fortitude when disparaged by others. Okay. So Job Lowe says, since it is difficult for the powerful to bear being disparaged by inferiors, it is proper to punish them. Okay, so of course we all feel we're the powerful, and the people who disparage us are the inferiors, even if they're our boss or our parents or whoever. So we think it's proper to punish them. Yeah. So Aryadeva says to that, who has gone to the next world having ended all disparagement? Therefore, consider contempt preferable to ill deeds. Okay, in other words, who will go or has gone on to the next life having completely put an end to his enemies by defeating and humiliating them? Yeah? Do you know anybody who's died, who can say, I've completely defeated and humiliated all my enemies? No. You know, you die in war, you die in battle, you die in peace. Nobody can say, I've defeated all my enemies and humiliated them. Yeah. So since that's the case, oh, what use is it trying to destroy all of them when you're alive? Especially when by destroying some enemies, you just create new ones. And this is the whole thing that's going on, you know, on the international level, how the behavior of the U.S. government has actually incited more militants, you know, because we hurt people, then their relatives, you know, want to retaliate. I'm not saying it's good that they do that, but I'm just saying, you know, we need to think, can we ever really put an end to all of our enemies by destroying them and humiliating them? As a technique, that never works. You know, nobody's been able to do that on a personal level and on a government level. Nobody's been able to stop all their enemies, all their adversaries. Yeah. So if you're going to have to live with people who think differently than you, then you might as well try and cooperate with them and establish some kind of good relationship. Okay? So, by retaliating, you create non-virtue and will have an unfortunate rebirth. So you may just try and destroy all your enemies in this life. But the only result that comes from that is that you die angry and you have a bad rebirth. What good has that done you? Yeah, all the people who you've destroyed are already dead. Even if you haven't succeeded in destroying them, they're living. Yeah, so what good has it done you to destroy other people's lives? Because when you go on, it just manifests in one's own, you know, horrible rebirth. Okay, therefore, we should endure contempt, thinking it is preferable to the negative karma created by subjugating our enemies. So better somebody have contempt for me than I create negative karma through harming them, by getting angry and harming them. Because when I die, what's going to come with me? Is that person who has contempt for me going to come with when I die? No. Will my negative karma from retaliating and trying to kill them in response come with me? Yes. Yeah. So in Shantideva's text, when he talks about this, he says that when we kill other people, it's like killing people who are going to die anyway, so what's the use of killing them? Yeah. And if you can't, an enemy, an external enemy, it cannot make you have an unfortunate rebirth. But the enemy of our own anger can make us have an unfortunate rebirth. The worst an external enemy can do to us is take our life. That's it. But we've had millions of lives in unending samsara. So they destroy one life. But they cannot make us take a lower rebirth. But our anger, that we take out by destroying others' lives or, by harming them, that can send us to the lower realms for a long time. So the real enemy is not other people. The real enemy is our own internal rage and anger and hatred. Okay? So that's why he said, therefore we should endure contempt, thinking it is preferable to the negative karma created by subjugating our enemies. Yeah. Through enduring contempt, we won't have a bad rebirth, but by doing ill deeds, we will. And so just as there's no end to a water wheel, there's no end to disparagement either. One time I was at a retreat, and in the break time, in the middle of teachings, something had happened, and somebody came over to me and scolded me. In the break time, in the middle of teachings, why are you saying this? Why are you doing that? And then teachings went on, and I was kind of angry, but I paid attention to teachings anyway. After the teachings, I was walking back to my cabin, and my teacher was. It was like I don't know what hour in the morning because he finishes teaching so late, and I thought, if I keep on being angry, I'm not going to sleep tonight. And I only have 4 hours to sleep anyway, so I better get rid of my anger because I really need some sleep. And then I also thought, it's like, where am I ever going to go where I'll never meet people who scold me? Where am I ever going to go where I never meet people who disagree with my ideas or who don't like what I do or who misinterpret what I do or for whatever it is? Where in the world can I ever go? Because if it's not this person who said something, who disparaged me, it's going to be somebody else. So I thought, I might as well just kind of get used to this and chill out, because it's going to happen again and again and again and again, because it's all coming because of my own harmful actions. And it's all coming because I'm in cyclic existence. Yeah, so as long as I'm in cyclic existence, people are going to criticize me. It's nothing new. Yeah? And one time I some people were criticizing me really badly, and I went to see my teacher, and he said, You know, a lot of people criticize the Buddha. And I thought, you know, he's right. Because you read the scriptures, a lot of people criticize the Buddha. And a lot of people criticize His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So, of course, they're going to criticize me. You know. So again, you know, I might as well just chill out and not get so upset about these kinds of things. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
Sometimes I have the tendency to take it too much in meaning, not to, I don't have the clarity necessarily, and just trying to separate others' anger maybe. And I'm taking it on and I'm thinking, oh, what did I cause them to get angry towards me? And
it's all my fault.
Yeah, I know not that I'm thinking it's my fault, but I'm really thinking about it deeply, and it makes me sad that another person, and then I'm getting angry, and then I have to get very clear, and I have to have a strong practice, and then that's okay, but sometimes I'm not so strong, and then I'm falling into that habit.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, so when you fall into that habit, then you have to come back to your practice of what's the Dharma way to think in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when, you know, when you find yourself just going in that habit of, oh, what did I do? And, you know, something's wrong with me, or I'm so angry because they're mad at me and I didn't do anything wrong, and who do they think they are? But even, but you don't say anything, but you're walking around. Yeah. 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 Oh, I just want to talk with them and work it out, and they don't want to talk with me. Oh, it sounds like the Republicans, and that's exactly what the Republicans are saying to the Democrats. you know? And anyway, and then, you know, getting so unhappy about it, and it just is so miserable. And, you know, and our mind just builds it up to this huge, huge, huge thing, which it isn't. Yeah? And just to recognize, you know, sometimes just stop. I remember one other time, oh, some people were really doing some not nice things, you know. I won't tell you the whole story, but they were really doing some not nice things. And I was getting very, very upset about it. And I was walking back from teachings. I was in Dharamsala at the time. And this thing with these other people had been going on for quite a long time. So I was really... And I was walking back from teachings. And then I said to myself, how many people in this universe are upset by what these other people are doing right now? Yeah. And I thought, you know, well, there's a number of people who know what they're doing, but they're not so upset. There may be a little inconvenience, but they're not so upset. Actually, the only one who's so upset by what they're doing is me. Hmm. Yeah? They're doing this horrible, horrible thing that's really unfair. And it's only me that's upset. So how really important is this? If it's only me that's upset. You know? It's like, this is not so important. Now, and I can deal with these people, and, you know, I can speak and try and work things out or do whatever I need to do, but I don't need to be furious at them. Other questions? Anything? Something to meditate on, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Where'd my paper clip go? Where'd my paper clip go? My, who took my paper clip?
Under my chair.
But that's not fair.
It's right there in the book.
It is under the cat.
No. It wouldn't be under Sweet My Dream. But you see, I mean, mine... God, the paper clip. Somebody must have taken it because they want to sabotage me and not let me have my papers put together when I carry them back to my room. Our mind can invent so many stories, can't it? So we're almost done with this chapter. We have one more verse, and then we'll go on to the next chapter next week.
Question about anger.
Sure.
I have colleagues who drink, and they usually drink out of the office hour. And but I can feel that there it is some negative impact to them and to the company, because when they drink, some of them the next day doesn't come to work because not being sober. Sometimes I think one of them, who is a manager, who drinks, and then she goes home and wants to work, and then he writes emails that sometimes, and it can be very unpleasant.
Yeah.
And he wrote it to some of my other colleagues, and because I'm his superior, so I talked to him and said, you know, maybe, you know, you don't write after, you know, when you get so high up, and, you know. And I said, try to avoid, after if you drink, just go home and sleep. Don't write, you know. And then, but he repeated his points, you know, I spoke to him. And I find it quite difficult because it is their personal activities, you know, they do it outside the office hour.
Mm.
And I feel that if I say too much, you say, hey, why are you interfering to my personal...
Okay, so... So somebody's drinking, and then that's reflecting in their work.
Yeah.
And you're concerned that if you say anything about their drinking, they'll say, who are you to talk about my personal life?
Yeah.
So don't maybe say anything about their drinking, but you can talk about the way they're acting in the office. And you can speak about, you know, these kinds of emails are not very helpful to the other employees. You know, and not coming to work on certain days or coming to work late, that's not acceptable. You know, the company, we're relying on you and we expect you to be reliable. So, you know, you don't have to, you know that a lot of it's caused by drinking. Yeah. So, certainly you can comment about how it's affecting their work. Not about the drinking, but a comment about the work, and say you need to look at what is motivating you to do this, because this kind of behavior is not helpful to your career or helpful to the people that you work with. Yeah, and then hopefully that person will think, oh, maybe it has something to do with my drinking.
They know their drinking is affecting them, and I can feel they felt something, but they say, I'm not going to change.
Right. You know, if it gets really bad, you might really sit the person down and say, you know, I feel this is, I'm saying it because I care, but this is really interfering with your work, and it's endangering your job here, it's probably affecting your family life. You know, would you be willing to... you know, go to AA or go to some kind of treatment program. Yeah?
How do you deal with the energy that's in the body when you have so much energy?
I take a long walk. Yeah? But I know that when I take a long walk, I have to calm my mind down, because... I may take a walk, but if I don't calm my mind down, the energy is going to still be there. Usually when I calm my mind down, then my body is more relaxed, too. But I find walking gives me also the mental space to calm my mind down. Yeah? Does your body still feel it after you've calmed your mind down, or is it while you're angry? Yeah. Yeah, so I think, to get rid of the physical things, you have to calm the mind.
I think it's one thing, if you can do the frustration, it's very helpful too.
Yeah, frustrations is very, very helpful.
always wonder about my motivation if I'm doing that.
You see, that's the wrong kind of doubt.
Really?
To say, I wonder about my motivation. You're angry, you're unhappy, your body is miserable, you know anger is non-virtuous.
Yeah.
What is wrong with doing prostrations if you think that's going to help you to stop being angry? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that? Mm. Nothing. Yeah? You're not doing prostrations because you're looking for fame and gain. That would be a bad motivation. Yeah? But if you're doing it because you know you're angry and you know that putting your nose on the floor helps you to be a little more humble and release some of your anger, then do prostrations. That's great. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it, have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous action spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losam's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guru Rana Mandala Kamniryatayami.
Due to the Spirit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain, pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West, flow